We're talking with Bill Sardi, and in this hour, we're going to get into red wine and the benefits of resveratrol. There's been a lot of research on potential benefits, but it's hard to tell who you can believe and what claims are real and which ones might be exaggerated. We'll get into that and much more here on Coast to Coast AM. Bill Sardi, we were talking about the FDA's sort of schizophrenic approach to vitamins and supplements in the industry. You would have to admit, though, there are a lot of shady characters in your industry who make exaggerated claims about the supplements that they sell, the lack of quality controls. I mean, the FDA has a point in that some of this needs regulation, self-regulation, if nothing else, doesn't it?
It's too easy an industry to get into, and as certainly a lot of the people who do are even oblivious to the rules. They don't even know what the rules are. There are FDA rules on manufacturing, then there's rules on certainly advertising claims, product claims, and so on. And then the FTC gets involved if it's a false claim outright, and they will get involved in a false advertising claim. But where you see most of that problem today is the internet, and I warn consumers to stay away from free offers on the internet, and there's a lot of companies working offshore, and you don't even know where these products are made, and then they're just sticking a label over another bottle, and you haven't got a clue. So, but one of the things I take them to task for is the FDA is allowing a lot of these renegade and outlaw companies to exist because they want to foment this industry and keep it going, that it's a bad industry, that it needs to be cleaned up, and all they need to do is enforce this. And one of the bad players in this whole mix, of course, is Google, because they allow people to make a claim, let's say my pill cures cancer, and it's a false claim. Well, you can't put that, you can't go to the New York Times and make an ad like that. They wouldn't accept it, neither would NBC television. So they enforce the rules, and so Google should enforce the rules also. So the FTC and the FDA need to be speaking to Google to stop it at that point, then we won't see it. Because there's always bad players. There's always people trying to be shysters. And, of course, a lot of very people are going to the Internet. They're desperate. They know modern medicine doesn't work. They just don't know what to reach for as an alternative. So I do think that, there are a lot of bad players. And we do have good manufacturing practices in place now. The products seem to be more in line with what the label says. We're getting a lot better quality of products. And we don't see a safety problem. By and large, this is the Poison Control Centers of America, and they publish a report every year. And we never see even one death from a dietary supplement. And of course, we've got hundreds of thousands here from the drugs. So, that doesn't mean there aren't side effects, but the serious side effect of running to a doctor or being hospitalized or death doesn't seem to be very prevalent with the dietary supplements. So it's important for folks to settle that out and try to buy major brand products and go with products that are not so wildly promoted on the internet, because that's where you're going to find most of the problems.
Well, a more practical and personal example for you is resveratrol and your product line, Longevinex. Is that, say I see the 60 Minutes story you referenced earlier about the benefits of red wine and resveratrol and the promising research that's been done, I want to go to the store and buy some of it. There's 25 products. I don't know what I'm getting. And as you have told me before, there's no way really to tell how much of the actual good stuff is in the pills or the tablets I might buy at the store.
Yeah, if so, the audience knows I manage a company that made and formulated a resveratrol pill, so I know all these struggles firsthand, and I am commercially involved in the answers I'm going to provide here. But certainly the issue of resveratrol pill, it's a little bit different molecule. If it gets exposed to light, it turns into a molecule that's inactive. And so you have to protect it that way. And so sometimes the label's correct when they made it, but if the manufacturer hasn't taken an effort, the company that I manage and so on, we do something called microencapsulation. So we enfold that resveratrol powder into plant starches and dextrins so it can't be exposed to light. We house it in a little opaque capsule so no light gets to it. We put it in a foil package. So the idea that, it, you know, are you getting what the label said? Maybe when they made it, but maybe not when you're using it. So it, there are issues there about the shelf life and so on that need to be taken care of. And one of the problems with the resveratrol pill is that if you go up in the dose, you've made it promote oxidation, whereas in a low dose, it's what we call an antioxidant. So the to make it a pro-oxidant, so at low dose, it binds to copper. At high dose, it releases copper in your system. So it that would might be good for killing cancer cells or germs. But for most people who want to stay healthy, we don't want to be doing that. And so a lot of the manufacturers have no knowledge of this, and they're promoting pills and saying, well, look, get more for your money. Get 500 milligrams or even 1,000 milligrams for the same price. That's the lower dose is far more effective. And then it's hard to tell consumers this and sort it out, and help people. And so there's a lot of ignorance on the part of the manufacturers as to the proper dosing of all this. And, of course, there was a researcher actually did a study, and what he showed was, this is literally remarkable. Today, we do not have anything in pharmacology and modern medicine that would prevent a mortal heart attack. We thought it was aspirin that was dethroned this year. If you use, you would need a higher, a baby aspirin doesn't work. It doesn't prevent the blood clots that stop the blood flow in the coronary arteries. The higher dose aspirin does, but you're trading one disease for another because it causes bleeding, gastric ulcers, and hemorrhagic strokes. So you can't go there. And all it was doing in the end was preventing non-mortal heart attacks. So it was dethroned, and now we don't have anything. As I said earlier in the first hour, statin drugs don't prevent mortal heart attacks. So we don't have anything. And here's research done with animals, and they take resveratrol, and they give a little resveratrol to an animal before they induce an intentional heart attack. And the heart attack's going on, but there's no damage to the heart. And then when damage does set in, it's mild, and there's a little bit of scarring. And, of course, we don't want any scarring of heart tissue because it's so hard to regenerate heart muscle cells. But when we use resveratrol, it's called preconditioning, then what it did is the resveratrol set off an alarm. Resveratrol actually sends a signal there's something wrong. And so then it upregulates antioxidant defenses within the body, and so you have a heart attack. You're preconditioned. You're pre-protected from the damage of a heart attack. So what it did is took a mortal heart attack and made it into a non-mortal event. That only occurs at a lower dose of the resveratrol. If you use too much resveratrol, then you actually made the heart attack, the damage to the heart, worse. Now, a lot of companies selling their pills, they have no knowledge of this, so they're trying to tell you, get more for your money, buy my high-dose pill. But imagine the promise of this. What has modern cardiology done with it? They say it's unproven. Well, okay, because I have cardiologists. I only have one cardiologist in the country that I know of that prescribes resveratrol pills. He's had a wonderful success with it for the last 2 or 3 years. But that gives you an idea of how few cardiologists have embraced a resveratrol pill. Well, the resveratrol pill, if we're going to do a human study, why, you understand it would take 5 years and $50 million. There's no dietary supplement company that could afford that kind of a study. And certainly it would take a long time. And that the FDA has this onerous requirement that we take high-risk patients and compare it against a placebo. So half the people that might have a heart attack would be getting a useless sugar pill, and then they would certainly die of their heart attack, and we consider that unethical. But this is what the FDA wants. You should compare when the consequences are blindness or death from a heart attack, you should compare it against existing therapy, not a placebo. You don't ask someone to prove parachutes work by having half the people jump out of the plane without the parachute and half with it. So that's what they're asking to be done. And this is what the FDA does, and then they approve drugs that have been proven effective against a placebo. They're not even as effective as current drugs, and then they hide that. You can't sort that out. Well, is that as good or better than the current drugs? No, it's newer, and it happens to, the patent happens to be in effect, and it makes more money for the drug companies. So the FDA hides the fact that an old drug that went off patent is actually still better, and doctors and everyone gets confused that the newest thing is the best, and that's another fraud, really, that goes on by the FDA.
And you mentioned
so they protect the drug companies and their profits that way.
You mentioned about the 60 Minutes report about the research showing the results apparently from red grapes, wine, French drinking wine. I like an occasional glass of wine, but I don't think I could keep my job to drink enough wine to have the health benefits. So talk to me about what research is available that proves that resveratrol has a variety of benefits, and talk about what those benefits are.
Right. The 3 to 5 glasses of wine that the French drink is the range, and more than that, of course, is deleterious. And, of course, that's just too much alcohol. That's the point of inebriation. You couldn't drive a car, you know, safely that way. So, but let's just take the alcohol out, take the wine solids. When my father, who was Italian, drank red wine, he was healthy all the time. He could get to his red wine, and his health failed when he got older and couldn't get to it. I was too young to realize it. But at the bottom of the wine bottle, there were solids there. And today we like a glass of wine. We look at the bottle, and it's all, there's no hard solids at the bottom. But they used to make unfiltered wine. It had more of these good molecules in it. That's the way the French make theirs. And they all of their red wines are very dark and aged for a couple of years. So that if you're trying to use wine as medicine, you want something very dark. Hold it up, hold a glass up. You should not be able to see through it. It should be aged a couple of years. Malbecs and things like that, the variety of red grape, tends to be provided a medicinal type of a wine. Unfiltered wine would be very good. But certainly there is the issue of the alcohol, and certainly there is liver toxicity and other issues. So in alcohol, and most people will overdo it a little bit. And so that causes another issue, a public health problem. So the red wine pill is promising, and what the researchers have done is used those exceptionally high doses to prove that resveratrol didn't prolong the life of laboratory animals. And so instead of using these more mild doses, you just take the same dose of molecules that would be provided in 3 to 5 glasses of wine and use that dose. And what they used was thousands of milligrams human equivalent in these animals, and they had some side effects and so on. And they've said that it doesn't work. And at cancer patients, they had myeloma. It's a bone marrow type cancer. And they used 5,000 milligrams of resveratrol. In the first week, the patients got a kidney toxicity, and they had to stop the study. And they said resveratrol is toxic. So you get these kinds of things, and, of course, they're just overdosing. And right now we're very concerned because the doctors with no hope of ever curing Alzheimer's with drugs, the pharmaceutical industry's given up. That was their official position a couple of weeks ago. We don't have anything in the pipeline. The National Institutes of Health is doing a resveratrol study using 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of resveratrol. It's a huge overdose. It's what we call the pro-oxidant dose. And we think they're intentionally doing this, and then it'll be considered like thalidomide. It'll cause side effects in these older adults, and they'll abandon it, and there'll be big negative headlines, and that'll take care of resveratrol for all time. So they're going to do it again, and you need to use these smaller doses. All the evidence points to it. The pill that my company makes is in that dosage range that's considered effective without being toxic. And we actually went ahead and did studies in animals and humans to show it wasn't toxic. But the researchers, we have a little trade secret in our pill, and they took the doses way up with our pill, Longevinix, and there was no toxicity at any dose, which is not the experience with plain resveratrol. So it's the safest resveratrol pill available at any dose that's used, and there is no toxicity in kidneys, liver, or any place that they can find. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't come without side effect, because if you're anemic, or it's not meant for growing children, not meant for women who are fertile and having babies. But for adults that are aging and on in their years, it's certainly a wonderful remedy.
What does it do? I mean, give me the laundry list of benefits that you think that there's enough evidence to make the case.
Our problem is it's a cure-all because, I mean, it's an antidepressant. It works what we call an MAO inhibiting drug, so it's an antidepressant. It's antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal. So it is anti-inflammatory, tremendous anti-inflammatory. We've had older people who can't get out of bed just start walking again and get up and move. And certainly it's blood thinning, so you don't need to take that blood thinning medicine, you see. And so, and you go on with the list here, there almost isn't anything that it doesn't address. Certainly all the major things it takes care of. And certain diabetes is another one, liver disease, another one, and so on. So it goes on like this. We think it's a remedy for a lot of brain and diseases in our older age. And so all of those studies have been done in animals. It's hard because it's going to take us 10, 20 years to figure that out in humans. But as long as it's safe, then I think we can tell consumers, you know, this is the best thing we have available. We have to go today with the best available evidence, because they're years away from discovering all this, and a lot of people don't have those years left, and they're going to find, as you're going to hear here in your audience in a few minutes, is some of the remarkable things that it's done, in particular for people losing their eyesight, because this has become a critical issue.
Well, the heart benefits you've already mentioned, but the cancer, the anti-cancer benefits, what are those?
The anti-cancer benefits, the way the researchers look at it is, if you take resveratrol and weigh up the dose, and so the dose is very high, it'll become a pro-oxidant. It'll generate free radicals, which is what radiation and chemotherapy does, and then it'll kill off cancer cells. Now, it does it in a somewhat non-toxic way, but nonetheless, that was the dose that did in myeloma patients. They used exceptionally high dose, but that caused kidney toxicity and so on. But there's a way to take away all that toxicity and make it still work, because it was Judah Folkman, the researcher who's now deceased, who discovered that if we just receded the blood vessels away from tumors, they would die off naturally. And there's a few drugs that attempt to do that. And then they went and tested in the National Institutes of Health themselves, and they showed that resveratrol helps blood vessels, new abnormal blood vessels, to recede so they don't get feeding tumors. And then they tested the pill that we developed called Longevinix and found that it was six more times effective at inhibiting blood vessels. This helps with a disease at the back of the eye called wet macular degeneration, which we're going to talk about. But that would be a non-toxic way of causing tumors to just shrink and die off naturally. And, of course, if you thin the blood, which is what resveratrol does, it keeps tumors from spreading, because tumors spread where there are blood clots. And then you lower inflammation, which is a chronic hallmark sign for cancer. And so what happens is resveratrol in many, many ways is inhibiting cancer. You just got to get rid of its toxic effect and let doctors handle that if they really want to use an exceptionally high dose to treat cancer. But for people, and by the way, resveratrol negates treatment resistance. That is, chemotherapy is used. It inevitably fails. Every chemotherapy patient will go into the failure of the treatment. It'll shrink the tumor by 50%. It'll come roaring back. But resveratrol overcomes treatment resistance. Is one oncologist using it today? No. So what happens here is that resveratrol can be used if you formulate it correctly. And according to the National Institutes of Health, the pill that we developed, Longevinix, theoretically, I can't make a claim for the product, but because of its ability to inhibit new blood vessels, would be a theoretically promising anti-cancer remedy.
So despite all this promise, you can't get doctors to use it.
No, we can't, and it's been an issue. And so what happened to us 5 years ago, we were sent some pictures of the back of people's eyes. These are digital images where they're suffering from a horrendous eye disease, wet macular degeneration. Wet meaning there is fluid in the back of the eye, and then there are new blood vessels. It's kind of like cancer. And the new blood vessels invade the visual center of the eye called the macula and destroys your vision permanently.
I'll tell you what, Bill, I hate to break off right there, because this is just getting good. When people hear about the effects with people who have wet macular degeneration, I think they're going to be very interested. We'll pick up the conversation after the break. Stay with us, everyone. More Coast to Coast AM to come. We're talking with Bill Sardi about benefits of resveratrol. And when we come back, we'll get into some of the hoops he's been forced to jump through and doctors have been forced to jump through just to try this on their patients, despite its promise, much of which has been fairly well documented. Stay with us. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM. Bill Sardi, you started to get into the issue of wet macular degeneration before the break. This, I should tell the audience, this is sort of how I became interested in your work and in resveratrol because of, I guess, the results in regard to this eye disease were kind of unexpected. So tell me how you started finding out about the potential benefits and what they are.
In 2007, we were confronted with these images of our pill reversing this disease dramatically within days, abnormal blood vessels at the back of the eye receding, inflammation, and certainly fluid in the back of the eye just receding, and of course these people get dramatically getting their vision back. It's important. We do have an effective drug for this today. They inject it with a needle right into the white of the eye. It works, but it doesn't work for about 1 out of 6 people. And so about 30,000 older folks just drift on into registered blindness every year. And so becoming aware of this, 5 years have gone by. What happened is those researchers all of a sudden out of nowhere clammed up, would never write a letter, would never report on this, suddenly wouldn't say anything. Well, the doctors are financially involved in the drug. They get $180 to inject it, $50 for an office visit, and they get, frankly, a kickback because they buy the medicine used for this, and they get a volume discount, they call it, and so they get a kickback of a few $100. So they're making a little fortune doing this medicine treatment, and they put it in the eye every 4 to 6 weeks.
It's expensive. It's expensive.
Or Medicare, about $16,000 a year.
Hmm.
So what happens is that we had to wait 5 years, and fortunately, a researcher at the Veterans Hospital in North Chicago, Dr. Stuart Richer, again, the Veterans Hospital, doing some things for the veterans that they're trying to help them in every way they can, so they have a wonderful system. And we did have to fight through the pharmacy board there at the hospital, but they allowed this to be used. Now, they said, no, nothing can be used if it's not FDA approved. But the chief of staff got involved and said, listen, this is a food supplement. So he said, if the patient orders it on their own, we can't stop them. And so the first patient took it, dramatically got her vision back with just 4 pills. She was able to see the doctor's face, see her own handwriting, and read the menu in the hospital for the first time. Another patient with 7 pills, just 7 days of taking the Longevinix pill, dramatic recovery of most of their vision. They had never seen this before. Well, what we're after here is a bigger issue. Let the doctors inject their medicines, but 30,000 are going blind every year that don't respond. We're going to be submitting a petition to the FDA. Would you cast aside your requirement for a new drug application? It'll cost our company $4 or $5 million, take 2 years, 60,000 more people would go blind. Would you push aside, FDA, your requirement that it be tested against a placebo? If we give placebo capsules to people that are going blind, they certainly are going to go blind. It would be unethical. Let's compare it against the existing treatment, the medicine they use, and allow us to proceed in a human clinical study so we could find out if we could rescue thousands of people's vision from certain blindness, permanent, irreversible blindness. And we're taking that petition to the FDA in 2 weeks and hoping that, and I'm taking a risk here even mentioning any of this because the FDA considers any talk about a dietary supplement curing, preventing, or treating a disease to be a violation of their rules. But we're trying to reach out here and we're going to be submitting this petition to the FDA on behalf of these people who are going blind because Dr. Richer found the first 16 out of 17 patients he treated, they had some measure of visual improvement in their eyes. That's pretty good. And 7 of them had dramatic improvement. More of them, only a third of the patients on the standard medicine they inject experience visual improvement. Dr. Richer thinks maybe 2/3 with the Longevinix capsule. So this could be certainly a big hope. These people have no other options to save their sight. Most of them are in their 80s. And of course, if we continue using the drug that they're now injecting, we're going to bankrupt Medicare, the part of it for the drugs, Medicare Part D. It's going to cost billions of dollars. The Longevinix pill would cost a few million for the hundreds of thousands, even millions that are going to get treated, but it certainly wouldn't bankrupt. It would save billions for Medicare, wouldn't bankrupt the system. So you can see that there's a lot, would be a lot of objection here. Doctors going to have money taken out of their pockets, drug companies that are selling billion-dollar blockbuster drugs now for this disease would be pushed aside. And so there's a lot of opposition. You can see why the doctors 5 years ago never reported this. The ethics is terrible. We're letting people go blind. If this pill is proven to work in larger trials, then we may have something that'll save billions of dollars and, of course, help people in an unparalleled way. It's better than the current medicine, possibly.
Well, I mean, what you need is a larger study. You need a larger study with more solid evidence involving humans to prove that it works.
Right.
What you've got now is Dr. Richard's experience, which is small scale but very encouraging, a couple of dozen people. He's had to jump through hoops, as you mentioned, to be able to use it. I mean, he can't prescribe it. He has to just let the patient acquire it on their own. I'm wondering, when he goes out and tells fellow medical professionals, hey, I'm on to something here, what's the reaction?
Well, of course, as you heard from Dr. Richard, he's tried to get a paper published about this. He's gone to four different journals. They've all rejected it. Do you see what modern medicine's doing here? And then, of course, as he's lectured, he lectured at the largest eye research meeting called ARVO, American Research and Vision and Ophthalmology Meeting, or earlier this year. We got one call from an ophthalmologist about our pill. From that, he was shocked. And, of course, it's gotten wider exposure about his work since then. Really, no response from modern ophthalmology or optometry. And so, if it doesn't say that it brings in so much money, it doesn't resonate with the doctors. They're looking for some fee to collect. So it just kind of undoes their incentive, what they're looking for. So we don't think we can even get doctors to cooperate and be investigators to study our pill. That's our problem. We're going to petition the FDA, but then we have to convince some reluctant doctors, wherever they may be, to do this. And unless we get the patients pressuring their doctors, we're not going to get any help here, because ophthalmology is dragging its feet. Obviously, they've let 150,000 people potentially go blind here. If this pill is proven to work this way, and with our petition to the FDA, we're telling them they have 90 days to respond to it by law, 7,500 more people will go blind. I mean, we haven't got time to wait, and they're asking us to do a placebo-controlled 2-year trial, cost $4 or $5 million, that I don't even think ophthalmology is going to cooperate in doing. So it's really a dilemma. The people need to hear this story, and it's terrible what's happening. I never thought I would be a part of something where we would develop something like it would be a great help to people, save money, do all these things, and nobody wants it. I can't believe it.
I should tell the audience, I'm working on a TV series about resveratrol, which is how I sort of got into this and thought you'd be a good guest for the program. And as part of that work, I interviewed a lady who lives here in Nevada in a rural town who was essentially blind. I mean, her life was, for all intents and purposes, over. She was completely helpless. I mean, she had to give up her driver's license. She was condemned to an idea of a life of never being able to watch TV or read. She was effectively blind. And then she started taking this stuff, and it was a matter of 4 or 5 days where it completely reversed itself.
She took she had 17 injections into her eye of the standard medication. It didn't work for her. It works for most, but not all. And, of course, it's expensive and requires a needle to be put into the eye every 4 to 6 weeks. So here was this oral pill working for her. She had tried 8 different brands of resveratrol pills. None of them worked for her. And she gave me a call. She was headed to over the border trying to find help in Mexico from a health clinic there, something for her eyes, just aimlessly headed there. and I had to send our pills to a motel room in San Diego, and suddenly she got better. God bless her. And of course, this story has become big. For everyone listening, you'll see it here apparently on CBS television here in a while, thanks to George Knapp. But it's a story of encouragement. We can't say that one person's experience is going to be everybody else's. It's not science yet. We need to put bigger numbers to it. That's what our plea is to the FDA, is please allow us to continue in a human study. And then we have to coax the doctors and prod them along, and it's only going to take public pressure. And that's why we're trying to go on the air here. We're taking a big risk because the FDA can slap my hand, tell us, sorry, we won't do any of this, we won't cooperate, take a couple of more years, spend millions of dollars, and file a drug application. So we're going to see how this turns out. It's going to be an interesting time.
To understand this, that there was a study by the National Institutes of Health. They went around the world looking for cancer cures of some sort, and they settled on resveratrol.
Yeah, this was done by Dr. John Pizzuto, and he was at Purdue University then. He's at the University of Hawaii now. And Dr. Pizzuto was commissioned by the American Cancer Institute to just tour the world, find natural molecules, which ones. He tested 30,000 of them. The result of his study was that just study resveratrol. That was his conclusion. Don't study any of the rest. It stops cancer at its initiation, its growth, and its spread or metastasis, all three stages. There is no current cancer drug that does this. It's not even used, but here we go. And, of course, since that time, have we had a cancer trial in humans? No. So we haven't. They're dragging their feet. The best way modern medicine ignores these natural remedies, just ignore it, shun it, act like it doesn't exist. And so the studies come out with humans and lab dish studies and so on. We get a few human studies of Longevinex was used in humans and shown to abolish the first sign of blood vessel disease. Again, nobody paid any attention. They just ignore it. So here we are with this terrible problem, wet macular degeneration. A lot of people don't find the treatment effective with the current medication, and certainly we're just bidding to try and push that science along a little bit and maybe get the first nutraceutical approved through the back door, maybe approved as a drug. I don't know what the FDA wants us to do, but we need to find some way to get this natural medicine tried, get some bigger numbers to it so we can find out if it works in larger groups, and if it does like it has and for so many here so far. We do have maybe 50 to 100 patients that have just come to our attention through Longevinex customer lists, and we're aware their vision is improved also. But, we can't say that's an organized and it's certainly what we call a controlled study. And, of course, we're taking issue with the FDA to what they call a controlled study is the placebo trial, and we won't go there. So we've got some issues before us. We're going to challenge the FDA, run the gauntlet, and see if we can't do this for just needy folks out there who need to find something.
You know, I want to make it clear, I'm not endorsing Longevinex. I'm not in the endorsement business. I just think that from what I've been hearing from you and some of the research I've been doing here is that it just shows enough promise, anecdotal evidence, a small sample, but enough to justify a larger study. Here's what I can't imagine. I can't imagine who would conduct the larger study and whether you could trust it to be unbiased and fair.
We're going to have problems with that. And, of course, our big issue with the FDA is to tell them, look, are we safe? Because if we're safe, what harm could come? We've done animal studies like they do for a drug application. We've done even human toxicity studies. We've proven it's not toxic in the liver and kidneys in humans. We've been using this pill for 8 years and tens of thousands of patients. That's more safety data than you're going to have on the first day of an FDA-approved drug because they enter the marketplace. They've only been used in a few hundred people, and then they say it's FDA-approved. They do not know about the safety till years later, like Vioxx and so on, and then they can tell you in larger numbers it's not safe and have to take it off the market. We've had tens of thousands use this, so if there's no harm, would you let us proceed? Now, this becomes something of an issue that we take to the FDA because their whole model is wrong. And, of course, the dietary supplements are far safer than these synthetically made patentable drugs. And in the case of resveratrol pills or Longevinix, of course, we have a pill that does cuts inflammation in the eye, helps the blood vessels recede, thins the blood so there's no clotting in the back. It does many things. Not the other medicine they currently use only does one thing. And so this is why it works probably better. It even addresses the very biological reason for the failure of the other medicine. So we show all this to the FDA in the petition, and of course we're certainly hoping they'll take this under consideration. We do not know what they're going to do with this. This is really what we anticipate is that obviously if the FDA says yes, that's wonderful for the public, and if they say no, that puts the pressure on them. We know what they're going to do, and that is stall. Just put more requirements in front of us. And, of course, we're a very small company. We're going to see what we can do. We're going to run the gauntlet and see what we can do to help these helpless people that are losing their sight. And of course, it's promising, and that's the only thing we can say. People want to call Longevinix and ask about it for eye disease. We can't answer any questions in that regard because we're not doctors. We can direct them to some more information elsewhere, but as a company, we're not allowed to say anything about any disease. So we are able to say it promotes a healthy retina and so on if we can show data and put it behind that, and that's what we're trying to do, whether it's a drug or a supplement or whatever the FDA wants to do with this. So certainly for a lot of people, this becomes a very, very important thing, and these people, most of them are in their 80s, and they can still be, you know, functional and certainly even drive a car or whatever safely as long as they can keep their vision. So it becomes critical for them.
You know, I look at the hoops that you're being forced to jump through despite all the promise that resveratrol, Longevinix show. And then you compare that to some of the stuff that's legal and on the market, anti-anxiety drugs. It's like half the people in the country are on anti-anxiety drugs, more than one. And they're bouncing off the walls, committing suicide and going over the edge. And then I just read another study about antibiotics a couple of days ago. This report came out about antibiotics may contribute to mental illness because they could destroy something that's some kind of enzyme in the stomach that helps regulate brain chemistry. And those things are okay, you know, I guess because they're profitable, but something like this is not.
Let me tell you about anti-anxiety drugs and a natural remedy for that. Before we go further, some people are emailing me here. Longevinix, like longevity, L-O-N-G-E-V-I-N-E-X. The word vine in the middle, Longevinix. Oh, so a few years ago, a little herbal remedy called kava, it's made in the South Pacific Islands. It's a root. It's a little supplement. Even drug companies in Europe were selling it as an anti-anxiety remedy. It worked wonderfully. Somehow, the drug companies over there had a contaminated batch, and to cover the whole thing, blamed the kava for it, not themselves. And then the FDA got wind of it over here and sent out a bulletin and a letter and said, if you're having any problems with your kava pills, everybody got so scared, the companies withdrew it, people who were taking it spit it out of their mouth. It was a very, very effective anti-anxiety remedy, and the FDA wiped that pill off the market. You can't find a kava pill. In the South Pacific Islands, they had to plow over the fields where they had the roots and wiped out a $20 million industry and all these people's little incomes over the threat of it being unsafe. I mean, and we don't really have good things for anti-anxiety. By the way, good things for anxiety would be magnesium.
I'm going to ask it. We'll have to get into that on the other side. I know a lot of people have already been sending emails and texts and things wanting to know whether resveratrol helps this or that or other kinds of natural cures. We'll get to the phones and answer as many of those questions as we can after this.